This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. It is Tuesday, March 21st, 2023. And of course, in some parts of the country, we're still experiencing winter rain in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and even Phoenix. And even here where I am in Southern California, we had lots of rain and wind today, pretty big storm. And there was snow in Reno, Nevada. So winter is still happening. I see on the East Coast, in the Midwest and the East, there's still rain and snow. I mean, the winter's hanging on. But it will change, just like the stock market. Things change. It just happens all the time. We're into week 12 of 2023, and nothing stands still. So you're going to constantly deal with changes. And, of course, you see what happens every day in the market. And, you know, the fundamentals of what's going on in the economic system have changed than they were a year or two ago. Those same fundamentals were existing for long years, many years, 10, 15 years. And that's where interest rates were falling, and now interest rates are rising. But with all the bank crisis, the Fed's meeting now. What's the Fed going to do? What is the Fed going to do? I'm Steve Peasley. I'm here today on this radio program and podcast to help you make the most of your portfolio decisions and try to figure out what direction the Fed's really going to take, and what direction the economy is going to take, and what direction will the stock market take. I mean, this is all very difficult things to figure out. And the best you can do is take the information that you have and try to analyze it and make your best predictions. And if you can't do that, that's okay. You don't have to. What you can do is just be a buy and holder of good, solid companies, and you'll be fine. Okay? And for those of you who are new to InvestTalk and haven't listened to the show, Justin and I are always very careful about giving you straight, unbiased answers to any of your questions. We have no hidden agendas where I'm not trying to push anything on you. That never happens. And I think we can say with all, you know, we all want to learn things about the market. I want to continually learn, and it's continually changing. And, you know, some things stay the same, but some things don't. And you got to really understand, the more years you watch the market and figure out what's going on, the more you understand that it's very, very difficult to predict. What you can do over long periods of time, and just know that the market goes up. It always has over long periods of time. Now, there also are periods of time where it doesn't, and it could be years where it doesn't. But generally speaking, the market goes up if you're patient enough. So I'm going to give you straight information all the time. You can rely on that. Now, it doesn't mean I'm always right. It doesn't mean that. But it means that I'm going to give you my honest opinion and the facts that I have in front of me, and I'll share them with you. We're here to learn, and it's going to be interesting. I think learning is interesting. Okay? So, how to do this? We have a lesson here, and we lead a lesson every day, okay? And that will lead you to successful investing. And of course, I encourage you to participate with your finance and investment questions. Remember, this is a call-in show. You can ask anything financial you want to. Or, you know, the line is always open, 888-99-CHART. That phone line is always open for you to call, 888-992-4278. We're live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. But when we're not live and you have a question, you still can call that number and leave the question. We'll answer it. So try to do that. My focus point concerns a story understanding the UBS takeover of Credit Suisse and the impact on bondholders. It's different this time for the bondholders in a bankruptcy takeover situation. So and that difference could be meaningful, especially for European bonds over a period of a year, next few years, next decade. So we're going to just talk about that. I think it's interesting. Housing, existing home sales were out today for February. We're going to discuss that. Federal Reserve is meeting, and they're in a tough position. What do they do? Do they raise the rates, leave them flat? Do they decrease the rates? Before this bank crisis, everybody knew they were going to raise the rates. They said they were going to. That kind of might not happen. And let's talk about Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and what she said about smaller banks. I think that's interesting. The Supreme Court is hearing a case on cryptocurrencies. Have you seen that? It's about the agreements when you have a platform, arbitration agreements that people sign. What kind of impact will that have? And if we get to it, four states that don't tax pensions, 401ks or IRAs, no tax. So do you know what the four states are? Those are things we're going to do if time permits. We're going to discuss every one of those. I will also dig into the main talking point about the UBS and Credit Suisse. But let's go ahead and go right to a voicemail. Do that now.
Good afternoon, Steve or Justin. This is Jeffrey from Alabama, and I'm a longtime listener. Enjoy the program. Got a question for you on Franklin International Core Dividend Tilt Index ETF, symbol DIVI. I was going to get your analysis and opinion on this for a 3% position, giving international exposure. Appreciate it. Be listening on the podcast.
Okay, Franklin International Core Dividend ETF seeks to follow the performance of the Morningstar Developed Market X North America Dividend Enhanced Select Index, small caps, mouthful, ETF that seeks the performance of the Morningstar Developed Markets X North America Dividend Enhanced Select Index, small cap. So, yeah, that will give you the exposure that you want outside the United States, and it'll give you exposure generally to probably healthier small-cap stocks because of the dividend. When a company pays a dividend, that means they're confident that they can pay the dividend and not require that they keep that money for operations or growth. They don't need it for that, generally speaking, as long as there's good management anyways. So this will give you the exposure you want, and I have no problem with it. I'd like to look at the top maybe 10 holdings that's in this ETF and see what they look like. That's probably what I would do. It's, it's a very, very small cap ETF. I mean, only $22 million, so it worries me a little bit because it is so small, okay? And it's small cap, meaning it could be pretty volatile. So you got to be really aware of that, okay? We've got a special event coming up on tomorrow, Wednesday, March 22nd at 2 p.m. that I think you should know about. The KPP Financial Company, our firm, Justin Meyer's firm, will present a new wealth webinar, Value Investing, positioning your portfolio on profitability, relative price, and dividend payments. The Wealth Webinar is free, they always are, and it will be a crash course on how to structure your value portfolios, giving real examples with assessment tools that KPP Financial uses every day to grow our clients well. The webinar will be anchored by Justin Klein and by KPP Financial Portfolio Manager Luke Guerrero. Okay? It's happening tomorrow, Wednesday, March 22nd, from 2 to 3 Pacific time, a new KPP Wealth webinar. It's free, but you got to register, and you can do it now at investtalk.com. And please tell your friends and family members. We'd appreciate that.
Thank you, and I hope to be the 50 millionth download of your incredible show.
It is official. As of February 21st, an exciting new InvestTalk milestone was achieved. The InvestTalk podcast exceeded 50 million downloads.
How do you guys determine a value stock?
50 million.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
Hey guys, this is Josh from South Carolina. I'm a longtime listener.
24/7, rain or shine, on tough market days or during brighter moments. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley are ready to answer your questions.
Our now preferred share is kind of a hybrid asset. It's part of the capital structure.
You want to buy this when it's on sale, and when it gets on sale, it's about $16 a share.
50 million. InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART. Everybody wants a secure financial future. But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. Steve Peasley is ready to provide his unbiased answers. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. My name is Brandon from Oklahoma, and I had a question for y'all. I've been seeing a lot of talks about, you know, obviously inflation's real high and people thinking it's going to keep running high. My goal for retirement is, you know, to have, I'll just say, like, at least $1 million. And then I hear replies about that saying, well, $1 million in 30, 40 years isn't going to be nearly enough due to, you know, 7% a year inflation. And, you know, they throw numbers out. I was just kind of wanting to get y'all's, you know, take on, you know, $1 million for retirement, say 30 years from now. Because to me, that would, you know, at a 4% withdrawal rate plus Social Security and pension, I'd be bringing in more money than me and my wife working right now. So, yeah, I was just kind of curious in his take on, you know, kind of, I guess, inflation of the dollar and what you need in retirement. You know, is what you have today going to be enough then, kind of thing? Thank you very much. I look forward to hearing your answer.
Of course, that's a difficult question. $1 million is, if you can achieve it, that's great. I'll congratulate you on that. Of course, you know, 20, 30 years from now, that $1 million won't have the buying power it has now. So, yeah, I would like you to have more, and I think you can achieve more. I think your ability to grow money is probably too low. You should be able to grow your money. You should be able to grow your money, I don't know, 7 to 10% a year over long periods of time. And if you grew it at 10%, that means every 7 years or so, it would double, okay? Double in value every 10 years if it was 7% growth. So these, I'm giving you approximates, okay? So don't think you can't achieve more than $1 million. If you retire today and $1 million, can you survive on that? Yeah, depending on what part of the country you want to live in. You want to live in Southern California, it's not going to happen. San Francisco Bay Area, not going to happen. Northeast, not going to happen. But maybe in the South, maybe in the Midwest, maybe Tennessee, you know, those kind of states, yeah, you probably could live off that, you know, if you're, you know, plus Social Security. Social Security will be there. Don't think it's not. It will. So you can do it, but it'd be, you're going to get more in Social Security than you think in 30 years from now. It will go up. It will grow. Okay? When people take time out to leave an InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, we like to thank them for their courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. So the Puma 51, I had bought the last dip in SWBI and was wondering if I should invest a little more or hold. I plan on holding this until sometime in 2024. Why do you have a date on it, I wonder? 2024, what makes it in your head that that's the day that you're going to be out? Now, this is Smith & Wesson Brands, manufactures firearms, including revolvers, pistols, rifles, and firearm-related products and accessories. They have always made money. It's not consistently growth. They don't. They don't have growth. Very little growth, matter of fact. But they have spurts of times when they have great fundamentals. 2021, 2022, they made 450, 425 per share. $4.54 in 2021, $4.25 in 2022. This year, they're only going to make 91 cents, and they're only scheduled to make 91 cents next year. But the stock is an $11 stock. It's a very inexpensive stock and always has been. It will never be expensive, in my opinion. Return on equity is very good. Huge cash flow. The fundamentals are very sound on the company. But you really buy it for a 3.6% dividend. But that is consistent. They'll always pay it. And it will go up back to the mid to high 20s of right now, $11. Eventually, it will go up there. You just got to be very patient, I think. That's SWBI, Smith & Wesson. We're going to a quick break. My phone lines are open. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, each time I host the Invest Talk podcast, I have the satisfaction of taking caller questions and then breaking down the often complex dynamics involved. If you've never called, don't hold back. You can leave your Invest Talk questions on the 24/7 anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. So, my focus point concerns a story understanding the UBS takeover of Credit Suisse and the impact on bondholders. So, UBS took over Credit Suisse with the help of the Swiss authorities. They took over the company. Now, Credit Suisse already had financial problems, had for a number of years. They were having issues they were working on. But, of course, this current run on the banks really put a dent in their ability to move forward. So they were, you know, the Swiss authorities took it, basically forced them to sell for $3 billion to UBS. But also, the most interesting part about this takeover is the low-ranking bonds that the Swiss authorities said they had to write down to zero their value, while at the same time, their shareholders actually got some money for their holdings, the stock that they hold. Now, that's different. Usually, it's the shareholders that get zip, and the bondholders get whatever's left. Now, these were bad. You know, these are low-quality bonds, but we're talking, you know, not just a handful. We're talking billions. And the bank authorities made them write them down to zero, taking nothing. That has not happened before. That's not how it usually works. You know, if a bank goes under, there are different tiers of levels of holding companies, or whoever holds their debt and holds their assets, get a certain amount of money in a very, very predictable way. And bondholders are much higher than stockholders on the I don't know what you would call it, but the what they get from a bankruptcy. And that didn't happen. Now, what's the big deal? It's good for the stockholders. That's great for them. But what if you're a bank in Switzerland or anywhere else in the world, and now you want to issue, you're perfectly fine and healthy, and you want to issue bonds or, you know, take bonds or buy bonds, and you know, the quality, if it's low, this is telling you that maybe that's going to what it will do is increase costs for the bondholders. The bonds are just going to be more expensive because the risk has just increased dramatically from what it was before. Your risks are going up. So poorly rated bonds, and will that affect other rated bonds, higher rated bonds? I think it will. I think long-term, this is going to push interest rates up for anybody issuing bonds. And, you know, is that bad? Not necessarily, but it's going to be impactful on what these banks do. You know, just sitting back and, you know, I look at this and I looked at, you know, Silicon SVB Financial Group and Signature Bank and Silvergate Bank, and you look at these banks, how they went under, and you say, is running a bank so difficult that, you know, you can't manage this. Now, what's really I find interesting, one of those banks, and I forget which one, if it was Silvergate or SVB, the bigger one, 18th largest bank. I looked at the board of directors. They had like, I don't know, 12, 15, 18 board of directors. Not one of them had banking experience. What? Not one of them were bankers. You have a board of directors on a bank, a big, huge bank, and your board of directors don't have any banking background? What? No, you can't. You got to have people know what they're doing to help you run the company. That's what the board of directors are for. Obviously, that's not what this board of directors is for, was it? This board of directors is for something else, for political reasons, for, I don't know, social reasons. Certainly what for to keep the bank healthy. Maybe we need to look at the board of directors of all these banks we invest in to see, you know, what their background is, to make sure that we know and we're comfortable that they know what they're doing. It's interesting. Let's keep moving and go to another listen line question, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin or Steve. I was calling in regards to ticker symbol RIO, Rio Tinto. I was wondering what you guys thought about entering Rio Tinto, or exiting, I'm sorry. I actually own 100 shares of it and was wondering, should I buy more? So just wanted to know what you guys thought about it. Thank you, and keep up the good work.
Okay, this is a bank out of United Kingdom, Rio Tinto. Not a bank. This is a company out of United Kingdom. UK-based company with global interest in mining metals and industrial minerals. It's a $106 billion company. So it's very large. You don't buy this for the growth. You buy it for the dividend. It pays a 10% dividend. They made $13.26, their best year by far in 2021. 2022, they made $7.62. This year, they're going to make $7.10. Next year, $6.19. And it's a $65 company. So it's like a 10 PE, which means it's not cheap. Cheap would be a little under $50. And that's where I would buy it. If I held it, if I owned it, I would know I bought it for the dividend. And I just hold it for the dividend. That's what I would do. So let's go to the trivia question for today. According to an analysis by the New York Federal Reserve, there are 6 college degrees that left graduates earning a median salary of less than $40,000 within about 5 years of graduation. What a waste of a college degree, the expense of it, right? So let's go to the break. Here's my trivia question. What was the worst paying job for a college degree holder? Five years after graduation. I'll give the answer right after break. 888-99-CHART.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy and discipline. Steve Peasley is here and ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Okay, before the break, I gave a trivia question. What was the worst paying jobs for college degree holders 5 years after graduation? So this is a study by the New York Federal Reserve. They analyzed data that median salaries of graduates in 2021. The data only indicates the salaries of full-time workers with a bachelor's degree and excludes those currently enrolled in school. So you have a bachelor's degree. Two types of salaries were detailed in the analysis. Early career, which is ages 22 to 27-year-old people, and mid-career, 35 to 45-year-old people. So the New York Federal Reserve found that the six lowest-paying majors fell under social science and liberal arts. Do not send your kids to college to get a social science or a liberal arts degree. They're worthless. Worthless. They don't pay enough to pay back the loans that you're getting for the college degree. What are the best ones? What are the highest paying majors? They're in science, technology, engineering, and math. So if your kids are going for those, fine. But if they're going in there and just taking social science, liberal arts, it's a waste of your money. A waste of their money, and most people are going hugely into debt. I'm very unhappy with colleges and the system these days. And there's way too much information to share in the time I have here. So I'll share a limited set of interesting data points, okay? So the medium, okay, for performing arts, medium early salary, $39,000 a year. How much is your loan? Trying to live on $39,000? People who majored in performing arts were earning a medium wage of $62,000 as a mid-career worker. $62,000. You're 35 to 45 years old and you're only still making $62,000. Have you been able to pay off your degree? Leisure and hospitality, $38,000. $60,000 after you're in your 30s and 40, early 40s. Psychology, $37,000. Psychology graduates can expect to earn $65,000 in mid-career. Not great. These are not great. Okay, social services, $37,000. Family and consumer sciences, $37,000. Theology and religion, $36,000. So if you don't care about the money and you're not, you got to pay back loans and you didn't take out loans, okay. But you're not going to make very much money in these kind of degrees. It's just not worth it. Theology and religion was the worst paying major for 5 years after graduation. And maybe you don't care, but if you're taking out loans, you got to pay back the loan. Notably, chemical engineers took the top spot, chemical engineers, when it came to high salaries, high wages. $75,000 5 years after graduation. That's the median. Median salary of $75,000. So if you have a family member in college, make sure they choose their career path wisely. Why? Think about it. Why? Anyways. That was our trivia question. Housing, existing home sales came out for February today. And the market, I don't know if I told you, it was up 316 for the Dow, 51 for the S&P 500, 184 for the NASDAQ. So a decent day today on top of a decent day yesterday, probably because everybody's calming down about the banking crisis. But we did have the existing home sales report for February, and it jumped 14.5%. 4.58 million was the largest number, 4.58 million annualized sales. That was an increase. That's the first increase, the largest increase since July 2020. And that ended a 12-month decline. 12-month decline every month. So it jumped. Prices fell a little bit, though. But why did it jump? Because interest rates came down a little bit in February. People getting in before they felt that the interest rates were going to go back up again. Okay, so that's what happened there. So let's take a listener line question that came in earlier, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Steve, this is Matan calling from Tel Aviv, Israel. Big fan of the show. I'm looking for a small cap value ETF, currently debating between the Vanguard VBR and the Avantis U.S. small cap value AVUV. I like that the Avantis one is leaning more towards energy and has a bit less exposure to the tech and healthcare sectors. On the other hand, Vanguard is really trusted and it's hard to compete with their expense ratio. Let me know your thoughts if you have a better one or I should be looking for something else in your opinion. I listen to the answer on your show. Thank you very much for all you do.
Okay. I, just off the top of my head, I would like Vanguard better because usually there are much cheaper expense ratios with Vanguard than with other ETFs. So that would be my first impression, go with a Vanguard ETF. And Vanguard is a very reliable, very big, very stable mutual fund family. So I kind of like them when it comes to ETFs and the costs. But I do think you have a good point about, you know, more exposure to energy and less exposure to technology. But I still probably would go with the Vanguard VBR, Vanguard Small Cap. Because ETF seeking performance corresponding to the CRSP Small Cap Value Index. And you know I do like value. So that's where I would probably lean toward, okay? You probably noticed that Justin and I are very happy about having reached 50 million podcast downloads, right? I mean, we're pretty happy and we'd say so, and we appreciate it. And to celebrate, we have been giving away 50 free subscriptions to the KPP Premium Newsletter. This is our 50 for 50 million. It's a thank you, okay? Thank you for everybody who's done this for us. So if you'd like a chance to win a free newsletter subscription, just follow InvestTalk on social media platforms like Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Then be sure to like and tag three friends on our 50 to 50 million post. It is that easy. We will be picking 10 winners each week, this week and next week. So follow InvestTalk and also tell your friends. The prize, if you win, is 1 year's free subscription to the KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out every week. It brings you financial news and commentary from me and Justin. And, you know, we think it's worth it. The KPP Premium Newsletter would normally cost about $199 per year. But you might get it for free. Again, just follow InvestTalk on social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. Then be sure to like and tag three friends on our 50 for 50 million post. Okay, we just played a question from Israel. Now let's take a voice bank question that came in from Germany on 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin, and a warm welcome to Luke as well. This is Paolo from Germany. I have to take out some capital out of my stock portfolio because I'm moving to the U.S. later this year. In the current situation, normally I would actually do the opposite, considering value stocks in the energy sector, for example, have gotten so much cheaper. But long story short, I was thinking of selling my Microsoft shares. My assumption is that the stock price is over benefiting from the whole ChatGPT theme. And once earnings results come in for Q1, the share price will come down again. So the question is basically, should I hold on to the shares for a bit longer than that, like till the second half of the year, or is right now a good time to sell? Would love to hear the answer on the podcast, and I appreciate your work. Have a nice day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, that's a tough question because you're asking me to predict what the future is going to be. And I have said that I think the market and our economy, stock market, will be better at the end of the year, be healthier by the end of the year. Now, that's my prediction. And, of course, predictions can always be wrong. Microsoft is a very strong company. I like what they do. They're going to make $9.31 this year and $10.78 next year. It's a $273 stock. So it's not cheap. The five-year range for their PE is 23 to 41. And right now it's at 30. Okay, so it's going to be 27 going forward. So it's not, going forward, it's pretty good price. It's not cheap, but it's on the value end of the scale. Return equity is huge at 45%. They have a huge cash flow, $11.24. It's a very well-run company. Management owns 1%. Mutual funds have been buyers for the last year. So there's a lot of fundamentally sound reasons to own Microsoft. But of course, the stock has done very well over recent years, and I can see why you might want to take some profits off of Microsoft, and I wouldn't argue against that. Maybe you can sell just some of it, maybe not all of it, and hold on to the rest. I don't know what else you own, so I can't like advise you, well, maybe sell something else, because I don't know what else you own. You know, and it depends, is it a taxable account that you have this in or non-taxable? There's all of these little questions that would be nice to know to make sure that you're making the right decision with the right company. But I don't have a problem with Microsoft cutting back on Microsoft. Okay, let me squeeze in another iTunes review question, by the way. So you can rate and review InvestTalk on iTunes and post your question anytime. We'll get to it quickly, promise. So this is Ubervester. What do you think about PAC with recent trends of near shoring, this airport operator may be benefiting? Near shoring. PAC. Okay, this is GPO Aero Papadou. Yeah, I can't speak. I don't speak that language. It's out of, let's see, did they tell me what country it's out of? Real estate, blah, blah, blah. It's a Mexican company that operates, maintains, and develops airports in the Pacific and Central regions. It's a $9.3 billion company. They make money. They've always made money. They've been growing their money very steadily for over the years. Pays a 3.7% dividend. They're going to make $11.71 next year after making $10.49 this year. It's a $177 stock. So it's around what? I don't know, 17, 18 PE. Return on equity is 48%, which is very good. Management owns 1%. Mutual funds are buyers over the last year. They have a lot of debt. I'd have to look into that debt. Why so much debt? They are growing sales very fast. Most recent quarter was up 62%. Quarter before that was 31. Before that, 34. Before that was 70. So they're still growing their sales nicely. And the stock has gone up. It's, you know, its high was closer to 200. Now it's 177. And it is right in a lot of pretty good support at this number. So it might be a good place to buy right in here. Okay. So take your chance. See what I like the dividend, 3.7%. If it goes down, at least you're getting a nice dividend. It has a lot of support around 140, 145, somewhere in that range. Okay, I'll take another InvestTalk caller question next, so hang on.
Mark your calendar for Wednesday, March 22nd from 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific Time. You are invited to a new KPP Financial Wealth Webinar, Value Investing, Positioning Your Portfolio for Profitability, Relative Price, and Dividend Payments. Be sure to tell your friends and family members about the new KPP Financial Wealth Webinar. It's free, and you can register now at investtalk.com.
My question is really simple. Is it time to buy on Facebook? Hold off? What's the deal, man? Appreciate it.
Facebook. Meta Platforms, META, provides a platform enabling members to stay connected with friends and family via Facebook.com. They're going to make $12.47 this year and then $14.67 next year, $14.67 per share. Sales are falling. They're not falling fast, down 4% in the recent two quarters, 4% a quarter. Return equity is pretty high at 19%. Cash flow is good at 12.20. They have just very little debt. Management owns 1%. But mutual funds, 1,000 mutual funds, well, not quite 1,000, 500 mutual funds have sold their position Facebooks. I wouldn't buy Facebook. That's not something I'm interested in. I don't like their model. I don't like their business model. Okay, I never have. And if you listen to the show in a length of time, this just wasn't one of the stocks that I'm interested in. It was got as low as here in December, you know, in the 90s, $90 a share. Now it's 200, so it's really bounced. But it was 340 back in September of last year, $340 a share. Now it's 202. Should you be a buyer of it? It doesn't interest me at all. Okay? Because, again, I don't like their model, their business model, how they make money. I don't like being pushed, you know, how they, you know, push ads on their Facebook platform when you're not interested in looking for ads. They push them on you. I don't like that. Now, that's obviously not the only way they make money. It's just the method I don't like. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Pease, and we have one goal here, to help you achieve financial freedom. And our work continues after this break. So get your questions in now, 888-99-CHART.
The stock market is constantly changing, and serious investors know that they need to modify their portfolio assets to fit the times. And now, with more than 50 million downloads, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley reaffirm their commitment to providing unbiased finance and investment guidance here on Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I was calling to get your opinion on what you think of the merger TD Ameritrade and Charles Schwab that's happening pretty soon. So just want to see what your thoughts are on that. I'll be listening to the answer on your show. Thank you.
Yeah, Schwab is buying TD Ameritrade. They bought them like almost 2 years ago, and they're, you know, working on making the moving toward the combination moving. And TD Ameritrade will disappear. It's all going to become Schwab. And it's going to make Schwab one of the largest, if not the largest, money manager, discount money manager firm in the world. So, you know, that's good if you like big size. I do, for safety reasons. You know, obviously, you know, the Federal Reserve and is not going to let that size of a company go under if something disastrous happens, because they don't let big banks go under. So that gives you some safety. Whether, you know, how much synergies you're going to get out of it and how much profits will this give a Schwab, it's kind of an unknown situation right now, but it certainly is going to be beneficial. And I think it actually will be beneficial for the people who use Schwab and TD Ameritrade as their financial platform, you know, and their, for their investments. So I do like it. I do like it, and it should happen, I think, sometime later this year. Now, the Federal Reserve is meeting, and they're in a tough position. They put themselves in this tough position because they lowered rates so far. And if you were listening to me, you know, when they were pounding those rates down, I said they need to stop doing that, and they didn't, of course. Now they're pounding them up, and I think they're been too aggressive myself. And, you know, I know they need to fight inflation. I get it. But what are they going to do now? They're kind of in a tough spot because if they raise rates, that's going to hurt banks even more, their balance sheets even more, okay, if they raise the rates. If they don't raise the rates or actually even lower the rates, would that mean they're giving up on fighting inflation? I don't think so, but what would that, would the market think that? If they lowered rates, have we seen the peak in the raising of rates? I think we might. I think we have, frankly. So I think the next move will be, I think you're going to have a move to lower rates eventually sometime this year. But, of course, it depends on how much inflation we have and whether it's, they can get on top of that. But, you know, we're seeing some of the inflation pressures come off in the oil prices and the banking crisis that we've had, the banking run that we've had, is doing some of the work for the Fed, right? I mean, think about it. What this means is that banks are going to tighten up standards, they're going to loan standards. Means they're going to be less. They're going to be more restrictive on the economy, and isn't that what the Fed wants, to slow down the economy, to slow down inflation? Isn't that so? Maybe they don't need to raise the rates. Now the estimate is they're going to raise rates 0.25. A few weeks ago it was 0.50, but the estimate is still, you know, that most analysts think they're going to raise the rates a quarter point. I'm not so sure I would do that. But that's what everybody's talking about. Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, pledges support for banks. Okay, she says that what's interesting about her speech that took place today or yesterday, I'm not sure, was that she said that even the smaller banks, she would protect smaller banks, lifting $250,000 FDIC limit on insurance. Now, that's different. Smaller banks she would protect. Before, it was just the big banks that they were worried about. So that, of course, calmed the banking sector down because of that. But I find that interesting. That means that there's unlimited insurance now for deposits. Is that what that means? I'm Steve Peasley, and this completes another InvestTalk program. Justin Klein, I thank you for listening. And we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get your downloads anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Remember to follow InvestTalk on social media. And don't forget to register for tomorrow's March 22nd KPP Financial Wealth webinar, Value Investing. It's free, but you got to register at investtalk.com. investtalk.com with two T's. Independent thinking and shared success, everybody. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.